Most people know that Kevlar is a man-made fibre. If you push them, they'd probably be able to name nylon for nylon fishing lines or stockings, rayon, polyester. Kevlar, it might be a bit tough. They probably may know that it's in bulletproof vests and stuff like that. And it certainly is an extraordinary molecule, something which I rather like. It's got some unusual features. It's a choice component, allegedly, to replace asbestos in brake pads. And we've covered just recently in previous podcasts wheels and brakes and got into brake pads. And I haven't actually gone into the actual material side too much. So this is how I've dropped across Kevlar, and it's definitely one of my absolute all-time favourite beautiful molecules. And this time I'm going to give you a tour of the Kevlar molecule, or molecular chain as it is. This is Peter Hill Explains, where I discuss things scientific. And I'm going to extend the podcast world by actually describing a molecule and getting you into what the molecules are. I've done a similar thing for the warfarin molecule, where I've walked you through the different features of the molecule. You might be able to do it in your head. It may be best to actually get a picture of Kevlar up to guide yourself through, or you can sit back and listen. So Kevlar was a freak discovery, 50s or 60s, by a woman. So in terms of discoveries, we're used to always trotting out, and yes, another man. Her name was Stephanie Kowalik, Polish first generation or second generation immigrant to the United States, and was working in the DuPont chemical. So DuPont was researching different chemicals, and they wanted a reinforcement fiber to reinforce tyres. So we've covered tyres and steel belted radials. This is another thing that could be replace steel in tyres, and of course that would be a great thing in terms of better profit. And if we can, the lighter tyres you make, the less rotational inertia there is in your wheels going around. So Kevlar, yes, Kevlar indeed is a super tough fibre. 4 or 5, many times stronger than steel. A bit unlike steel in that I think it can burn. Steel can't burn, and it decays under a high temperature and humidity conditions. Maybe some of its weak points. But if you go down to lower temperature, Kevlar's is a definite great thing. It's naturally a fibrous thing, because the actual molecules of Kevlar are fibres, but they're sort of fibres with something additional. It's one of the most beautiful polymers I've ever seen. And polymer means monomer is one unit which links onto itself. A super polymer would be a protein, which is amine, carbon with a side chain, carbon with an oxygen, and a OH. The OH and amine go together. The OH and hydrogen from amine come off, so you get nitrogen, nitrogen, carbon with a side chain, carbon with an oxygen, nitrogen. Strings through as a polymer. So you're actually, you listening, and myself, a gigantic organically produced polymer. So protein, which is the mechanical nanobots inside us, which activate our muscles and move nutrients within inside the cell and change the cell's shapes. Every heartbeat is due to nanobots of proteins moving about, hunting nanobots, which are moved to hunt and release a cycle of cell food ATP cell food. I'm just going to repeat this many times, and people who know it will go in. Other people who don't, they may tick me off for talking about stuff they don't understand. So, so a polymer in a protein. Imagine you've got a Lego block, and there's 20 types of Lego blocks, and you just assemble them, and you can get so many lots and lots of different colours, lots of different lengths. You can only build a linear stack, and that's why there's so many different types of proteins. Now, with something like Kevlar, we're not going to use amino acids, but we will use the amine group. It's going to be a bit more cluey than this, and there's only going to be two types of Lego blocks clinked together in a long line. So your Kevlar molecule, if you can imagine it, to start off with, is a white Lego block and a black Lego block, and it goes white Lego block, black Lego block, white Lego block, black Lego block, white Lego block, black Lego block, and just repeats off and on. In Australia, you've got a black and white team called Collingwood, and I suppose there's Zebra Crossing examples. So these molecules are very large, and the formula for Kevlar, and this is not official, this is just within the word description of this podcast, is square brackets white white dash black dash close square bracket, and then a subscript N saying there's N of these repeating units which go on. So you've got your magnifying glass, and you've got this thing which is all these stripes. You go up and look at one set of stripes, and it's I can now describe it as white, black, and N of this. So that's the formula of it. Now, white and black are not terms that I'm going to tell you what the white molecule is and what the black molecule is. And obviously, these snap together, and there's a method of snapping it together. So in proteins, it snaps together by a little water being pulled off. Now, this requires a little bit more. It's a little bit more different here. So a amino acid, it's the amino and acid in the same molecule. In this case, and so you can select different molecules to go in, this case is a little bit different. And so just wipe that blackboard off in your head of amino acids. Amino acids helps you give you the idea of a polymer chain. So we're going to make a long strip. And there's going to be a trick in this which will just... Well, it still stuns me. I'm just so stunned by this particular molecule. So remember, we're going to make a long chain, a polymer chain. Poly means many. So if it was just black, that would be a monomer. This is a polymer. So each the white is called a mer to simplify it. Or at least I remember being taught that back in year 11, many, many years ago. So I don't know whether that's still a popular thing. I haven't reread that. So it's white, black. And the white is a phenyl, a diamine phenyl. So an amine group is a N, two hydrogens, and a bond which sticks to a carbon. Phenyl is like benzene. It's a six-membered ring. So a benzene is C6H6. So the carbons form a flat ring, and around the outside of it, the carbons are hydrogens which form a flat ring. And then in the centre of that, floating above and below, a shared electron is called a pi orbital. So it's something which is, again, not well described by conventional chemistry. The actual bonds are described as a sort of an electron group or a bond which floats as a half circular bond at the top and half circular bond at the bottom, shared amongst all six carbon atoms. It's a benzene ring. So a hexagon similar to a beehive is a carbon ring. So graphite, which is just pure wall-to-wall carbon rings, is similar to looking at a beehive and took that, you put carbon at the vertices of the beehive and electrons around there, that forms a blanket of carbon rings. the electrons are above and below, and then carbon, this film of carbon conducts because that bond is shared amongst all those carbons, and those electrons can actually travel all the way around. So we've got benzene. Benzene is drawn as a hexagon with, if you number the sides of the hexagon, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 going around, the odd, between 1 and 2, 3 and 4, let's go 1 and 2, 3 and 4, 5 and 6, okay, I've just had to do that in my head, have double bonds. Now that's actually not correct, but that's a way of drawing a hybridization. So that's benzene. And you can have benzol and stuff like that, but we've got different names. I don't quite know how they go. For those rings, they're called aromatic rings. Aromatic because of smells. A lot of the scents have these rings in it. But a lot of things you can't smell have these rings. And a lot of these are quite carcinogenic, depending on how they are. You have two group naming groups, phenols, and toluenes. We're going to talk about the phenol one because it's a flat one. Toluene, obviously, the toluene is, if you imagine a hexagon with a methyl group at the top, a carbon with just hydrogen sticking on the end of it. So that's a carbon can bond to four hydrogens to remove one hydrogen from your benzene and one hydrogen from your methane and stick the two together, and you get a toluene. And on the other vertices, you can add nitro groups. Nitrogen with oxygens attached to it, and that will make you the most famous toluene, tri-nitro-toluene TNT. This is something which is quite a stable explosive, but it is an explosive. It does decompose with a shockwave, but you have to have a fairly high shockwave from a deliberate detonator as opposed to nitroglycerin, which has got a lower shockwave. So if something explodes, it's a shockwave. If something detonates, a small shock can cause it to decompose, and the chemical reaction of it decomposing creates enough energy for that decomposition to run through it. And this detonator can now be sufficiently large to detonate your TNT. That's trinitrotoluene, benzenes. Toluene, I know all of these are carcinogenics, and so it's absolutely sickening to see, visiting some different labs, people being very lax with it. They've been using it to clean optics and stuff like this for a while. But we're getting to our benzene ring, which we call phenol, and for our white blocker game, if you can imagine, and we're going to make carbon, I call it 1 and 4. It's 1, 2, 3, 4. Oh yeah, okay, 5, 6. Okay, so 1 and 4, the 1 and 4 carbon. So if you have a hexagon lying on its side, the left-hand vertices floating up, and the right-hand vertice, you remove a hydrogen there, and you get an ammonia, which is NH3. You remove a hydrogen from that, and that's called an amine. That's just the way it is. An ammonia with a hydrogen off and replaced with some sort of carbon compound, that's called amine. So that's phenyl 1,4. I will not be able to name the next compound because that's it's similar but more complex. I don't know how to do it. This is 1,4 phenyl diamine. So there's two amines here. So amines are great because you can rip a hydrogen off and add something to its nitrogen. It's a little bit easier to do, and that's what's done in proteins. So if you can imagine this as amine, phenyl or benzyl group, ring of six minus hydrogen, two hydrogens, and the other missing hydrogen on the other apex has got another amine. So it's amine, phenyl group, amine. That's our white block. Now let's build our black block. And we're going to have a phenyl group again, but it's not called phenyl. And this time we're going to stick a carbon, and the carbon has got one for bonding to the phenyl group and two and three other bonds. And I could remind you of the carboxy acid, the acid group, which is an oxygen carbon and then a alcohol group, OH. But in this case, it's going to be an oxygen with two bonds to the carbon, and the next bond will be to a chlorine group. Chlorine's got a huge electron affinity, so the electron's almost off it already. So you can imagine this is drawing huge amounts of electrons. So this is stuck again on the 1 and the 4. This is an oxygen, carbon, chlorine stuck into your phenyl group. Then the other thing, on the 4th carbon over, you've got another carbon, oxygen, chlorine. So they're beautifully two symmetrical molecules, your black and your white. And so we're just going to consider bringing a single black and white together. So we've got the two there, and we've got the amine group butting up against which is a nitrogen, two hydrogens, butting up against a carbon with an oxygen and a chlorine. And under heat conditions, I suppose, powerful acids, mix the two together. Chlorine will, it's got an electron affinity, will like the electron off the hydrogen and form hydrochloric acid and form a bond. So you've got, we'll get your white, you've got your amine, phenyl, a nitrogen with one hydrogen, and that nitrogen is now bonded to the carbon with an oxygen on it, which is then bonded to the next phenyl group. That's your white, black. And you can repeat this again, white, black, or black, white, by doing this again. And so you have this beautiful molecule occurring, which goes phenyl, nitrogen with a hydrogen, carbon with an oxygen, phenyl, carbon with an oxygen, nitrogen with a hydrogen, because it flips back and forth, because they're, rather than a amino acid, it's the amines in one and the acid version. So this is a chlorinated acid is on the other. So it's a bit different from a protein coming together. So this comes together. So let's go across. I'll keep on repeating it until you get it. So we start nitrogen with a hydrogen, and obviously that's bound further off to the left, and then moving from the left to the right, a phenyl, nitrogen with a hydrogen bound to a carbon with an oxygen, bound to a phenyl group, or benzene group, bound to a carbon with an oxygen, bound to a nitrogen with a hydrogen, bound to a phenyl group, bound to a nitrogen with a hydrogen, bound to a carbon with an oxygen, and we keep on going like that. I can keep on doing it. Carbon with an oxygen to a phenyl, then carbon with an oxygen, bound to a nitrogen with a hydrogen, bound to a phenyl, bound to a carbon with a hydrogen, bound to a carbon with an oxygen, bound to a phenyl, bound to a carbon with an oxygen. And I suppose you could say, if I I don't know, I've given white and black. When we're teaching drill, we teach by numbers, by one, two, three. I should do a lesson about how to move people. I think I've done a podcast on how to move people out of class, but I might do another one on that. So we've got that, and that is an amazing polymer. You've got some angle movement, but not a lot of angle movement because of the way the nitrogen, the electron clouds with the nitrogen. I don't know whether you can, I think you can rotate it. I just have to really think about it. The carbon ring is like it's almost a carbon fiber. It's a molecule thick. You know, a very, very tiny carbon fiber in that ring itself. It's really strong. Then I don't know how much you can actually rotate the ring out underneath that. That's not the full story. So this is a string, and depending on how long you do it, you can get longer and longer a chain, so the N can be 100 or N to whatever it is. And what will happen is that, I don't know whether you can do this with Kevlar, but if you took off a monomer chain and put it through some sort of mass measuring thing, you could give the molecular weight to thousands or tens of thousands molecular weight per strand. But that's not all that Kevlar does. So this is why Kevlar for me is one of the best polymers. Ah, the birds. Look, Kevlar also has, there's a lot of business going on with, you've got your nitrogen with a hydrogen and the oxygen. So if, say I've got one strand of black white blocks, and in between each of those black whites is this constant unit, which is a nitrogen with hydrogen, carbon with an oxygen. So if you marry from one strip of those, my first black white, and then put on top of that another black white, those bonds rotated right, the nitrogen with the hydrogen will like to give its hydrogen through a hydrogen bond, i.e. it will lose its hydrogen and pick it up from another point, but the hydrogen will jump between the nitrogen and the oxygen, forming a hydrogen bond, a similar bond which we promote in the centre of DNA for stripping it up. So these Kevlar molecules are super hydrogen bonded to each other. And so these molecules can't slip past each other when you put them under tension, or they, I suppose they can a little bit, because they've got this strip of hydrogen bonds bonding between the two molecules. And it gives you your familiar yellow fiber. I don't know how they make the fiber. I suppose they make other mats and lengths and robes and stuff like that. It could be a tad expensive making Kevlar, because there's not a lot of. I don't know how you could encourage bacteria to make their precursor. You know, obviously you'd want to get some sort of biofuel of bacteria to make the precursor stuff, and just put it in the vat and produce tons and tons of Kevlar. So I don't know how the Kevlar molecules are produced, and the actual bat and the sort of the black magic of producing it produces a yellow fiber, which is wound or woven in and put in a resin for body armor. And it's not thin body armor, it's quite thick body armor, because for it to work, it has to disperse the bullet coming in, or the helmet. So they're quite thick, and in my day, you had no body armor, and you had to get down. And now people have got all this body armor. They can't obviously crawl for a long distance. I think they might be able to, but so it's changed, and so you have Kevlar a Kevlar support for things with incredibly strong fibres. Now, where I've come across Kevlar, something you'll know with optical fibres, if you get one of your optical fibers with in the lab. It'll have a ferrule, polished ferrule, and a I've forgotten the name of the different. You've got an angle and flat at the end, types of optical fibers. And ferrules go into these ceramically machined tubes, so they're aligned. So these plugs align the optical fiber to micron accuracy when they just plug together. But these fibers are something else. I really have to remember. I used to make these up all the time. To get the fiber, you have to actually you've got your drum of optical fiber, and your fiber has got your glass in the center. It's got plastic cladding, a thicker cladding, and then it's got a Kevlar mat around the outside. And there is a bit of a story about how Corning went for the Kevlar over other things, and then it's got plastic again. So when you cut it open, you can't cut your optical fiber. In fact, they're super, super tough. You can't cut into it, and to actually cut that Kevlar fiber, you need special ceramic scissors to go through it. Now I think about it, I've sort of forgotten some of the names, some of the product names for them. So the original optical fiber had a petroleum jelly type stuff around, and Corning was trying to actually sell the optical fibers, and the salesman said, well, if you're not using the optical fibers yourself, how can we sell it? And so they installed optical fibers between various labs, and what happened to this is told to me by Corning employees, so I do not know whether it's true. I don't know whether it's in the lab. It's just been told to me quietly. So they had a fire, and what happened is they put out one fire, and then the fire would occur in the next building. And they put that one out, and then it would occur in the next building until they worked out that the actual optical fiber was like a slow-burning fuse. It slowly burnt through. So that much is true. What more can I say? So that's my experience of Kevlar. I have it there as of the human race, this amazing fiber which is produced. You sort of think, that's great. And you sort of think, what else could I do with it? Especially if you introduced occasionally a triamine phenol, and so that would branch, and what other things you could muck around with it. There's all these beautiful things, and I just recommend spending months or years not worrying about the fact that it's being overwhelmed by organic chemistry, just going in and learning about Kevlar, learning about polymers, learning about esters, that's carbon, 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 oxygen, oxygen, carbon, carbon, carbon. But it's so easy to go, or epoxies, which is a carbon-carbon with an oxygen over the top of it, and all that type of stuff. It is actually a bit overwhelming to learn about, but you can actually get on top of it. But it's just a persistent look, and looking at different, and taking tours of different molecules. So listen to this podcast, try and remember it, will go a bit fuzzy, then go and look up Kevlar, look at it again, and go back to it several times. It does take a while to learn, but once you've got it, it's stacked away, and then you'll have other questions that you have there. That's Kevlar. It's essential in arm. It's a new molecule. It is a plastic, so it doesn't do a lot of things. It doesn't do with metals. I don't think you can get some Kevlar and melt it up and pour it in a mold. You can't machine it. But look, in future, I'm sure we'll think of Kevlar-infused plastic. It's sort of like the molecular level carbon fiber for free. It's an amazing molecule. This is Peter Hill Explains. I hope you've been able to follow that. That's the intent of this podcast, being able to describe things in depth and build a verbal picture and hopefully get you part of the way there, 10-30% of the way there, and build it up with curiosity and actually start to look at it. It is a good thing to actually try and build the model inside your head without looking at it, and then when you look at it, it will help you learn. I can guarantee that. That's the way I learn. So in the meantime, please keep on doing science.